perception on how to view the world and the country and the world. He taught us the importance of doing research and speaking, and not just off the top of your head, of actually getting the facts. He used to say, I know when I go out and speak at various places that there are people in the audience whose sole reason for being there is to catch me with my facts wrong. So
Peter
I don't
Bailey,
give them that opportunity.
We have to break now, but we're going to do part two of this discussion with you and Ilyasa Shabazz, and we'll post it online at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Matthes. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host Joe Uris and Abe Proctor. Today we'll talk about war, more war, and yet another authorization for the use of military force in an undeclared war.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Unjust Treatment. The Portland police killing of James Chassie on February 24th, 7 p.m. at the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue Community Room in Aloha. The film Alien Boy, The Life and Death of James Chassie, will be shown and followed by a question and answer session with Jim Chassie, father of James Chassie Jr. Again, that's Unjust Treatment, the Portland police killing of James Chassie on February 24th. 7 p.m. at the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue Community Room, 20665 Southwest Blanton Street in Aloha. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
As citizens of a so-called democratic society, we need to have information that ranges from A to Z, not what we have, which is A to B.
KBOO is proud to present An Evening with David Barsamian, Wednesday, March 4th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. All proceeds will benefit KBOO Community Radio. One of America's most tireless and wide-ranging investigative journalists, David Barsamian is the host of Alternative Radio. Again, that's An Evening with David Barsamian, Wednesday, March 4th, at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I took a bath this morning in 6 war speeches and a sprinkle of peace. Looks like everybody declaring war against the forces of force. That's what you get for building up a big war machine. It scares your neighbors into jumping on you, and then, of course, they themselves have to use force, so you're against their force and they're against yours. Looks like the ring has been drawn and the marbles are all in. The fuse is lit and the cannon is set, and somebody is in for a fraylin'. There ain't but one thing in the world that can cause a war, and that is somebody's greed. It's hard to track them down and find out whose it is, because it's a lot of fellers, and they all try to lay it off on somebody else. They even try to call it a religion or something. If that's true, I'd rather not be quite as religious and stay alive, because I got another song or two I want to write, and a lot of traveling to do. Locate the man who profits by war and strip him of his profits. War will end. A kid is a kid and a bomb is a bomb. As long as the poor folks fight the rich man's wars, you'll keep having poor folks, rich folks, and wars. I would have lots of fights if I had another fellow to fight for me. But since I've got to do my own fighting, I try not to have no trouble. Same way with everybody. Make them do their own fighting, and you would do away with fighting. I would like to see every single soldier on every single side just take off your helmet, unbuckle your kit, lay down your rifle, and sit down at the side of some shady lane and say, nope, I ain't going to kill nobody. Plenty of rich folks want to fight. Give them the guns.
Well, welcome to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe will momentarily be joining us. I've been thinking a lot about what's going on right now, and there's so many issues that need to be covered, and I'm on, Abe and I are on, what, once a week? There's plenty of good shows talking about plenty of important issues here, but I decided that we're about to engage in a war that will not end all war, but will lead to endless war. And I, fortunately, our producer, Steve, found this little piece by Woody Guthrie, not a singing piece, but a commentary on war in general. And while the presentation there is kind of like naive, you know, it's still, nevertheless, absolutely correct. The war that we are about to engage in, very much provoked by some very nasty behaviors by some very hyper-religious people, is nevertheless a war that we, that is the United States government, actively created beginning way back when, way, way back when, back in World War I, and continued on in a colonial development that has been unending. It culminated, I think, if you want to call it culminated, with the decision of the United States government under the leadership of George W. Bush and his ugly vice president to go to war in Iraq, a war that we did not win, could not win, and will not win, unless you consider the destruction of the entire region a great and glorious victory, which hopefully will not happen. But the war is coming. It is very, very real. It's very disappointing to me personally that President Obama has fallen into the war camp, that the United States government is definitely hyped up for war, but it isn't surprising. A week ago or 2 weeks ago, we talked about the reality of the amount of money that is invested in the war machine in the United States. Back in 1960, 61, we had President Dwight David Eisenhower, himself a military man, warning against the creation of the military-industrial complex. And to the end, of course, one of the things about war is that it does help the economy if you can keep your war far away, of course. This is really a very serious issue. This is not just a war to make wealthy. It's a war of cultures and a war of determination of the West against other nation states. Meanwhile, the Cold War, totally unrelated to this war, seemingly, has ramped up. It very much looks like we will be engaged in an arms race and an endless series of confrontations with the former Soviet Union, with Russia, and with its new quasi-czar, Vladimir Putin. I'm very disturbed. I think you need to be very disturbed. All of the things that are going on today, the destruction of the environment, the inability to move to new technologies for energy, the structure of poisoning our environment, all of these things are directly or indirectly traceable to an economic system developed around and created around the endless progress of what I call late stage capitalism, which segues almost seamlessly into a kind of friendly fascism. I'm not unique in seeing this. A lot of people do, but I think it's really important. Today, I think we should be talking about this coming war with a critical point of view. And I think also we need to discuss what ISIS is about. We need to discuss where we're going and how it could possibly end in some way other than an endless struggle, which will be characterized in other parts of the world, if not here, as essentially a war, freedom against a fundamentalist religion. This is a very serious business. And it, to me, takes over more importance day by day, because I really believe that this undeclared, unending war will go on and on and on. And Abe's joining us now. And Abe, do I misrepresent things?
Yeah, man. Why do you hate America so much? Didn't you see those videos? They tortured those people. They beheaded them on camera. They set that guy on fire. These people are bad.
Well, they are. They're bad.
And they hate us for our freedom.
I don't know about anything about that.
Well, it's true, man. Why else would they be doing these things unless they hated us for our freedom?
Maybe because we invaded them and trashed their landscape. And
yeah, but Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator who gassed his own people.
Well, and who...
And he had weapons of mass destruction.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
Well, they were all moved to Syria before we invaded. That's why we couldn't
find. Is that the fantasy?
Yeah.
Actually?
Yes.
I didn't realize that. So those incredible barrel bombs being dropped out of Syria, Assad's actions, are really just a transferring of the weapons of Saddam Hussein?
Right. That
yeah,
is.
Yeah, sure.
That is one of the right ways.
We want to hear from you. This is a very serious issue. It's being kind of downplayed, amazingly. But the fact of the matter is, I think, and I believe Abe thinks, that we're moving into an age which goes beyond the old Cold War phenomenon into an endless fighting, an endless murderous war.
I do agree with you there. And that's why I don't think this is necessarily being downplayed. I think it's just become the new normal. Like, oh, okay, another war in the Middle East.
Right. And we've solved the problem of the draft by not having a draft, by having an enormous surplus of unemployed and potentially unemployable young people who can be brought into an army to fight endlessly. All of this is familiar to me historically in terms of what happened to England and its empire, beginning really in the 1800s and continuing on and on and on until the collapse of the British Empire. So this is really serious stuff, and it's not much fun. And I almost feel like maybe we should just pretend it's not happening.
I think that's what the warmongers perpetrating this war would like us to do.
Right.
Pretend it's not happening.
And we talked a couple of weeks ago about the incredible amount of money that is invested in the war industries and how it eats up an enormous amount of the budget, 55%.
Of discretionary spending.
Yeah. And it's really obvious that when you're producing all that stuff to kill and murder and maim, you're going to have to at some point justify it and put it to use. And that's what's really happening. I would call this Dick Cheney's revenge on what? On America. And I would say that in fact, the leadership of this country, and unfortunately, including Barack Obama, they have lost all legitimacy, and their intentions are terrible. And we are in a frightful situation where it is very possible that it'll be like the novel 1984. We'll just have big screens of war, everybody chanting against the enemy.
I want to unpack a couple of things you said just now.
Sure.
In what sense has Barack Obama lost all legitimacy?
Well, when he ran for president, he created the aura of a new era. Mm-hmm. He made some promises about the environment, about world trade, about domestic policy, and about war, all of which have not been fulfilled or even attempted to be fulfilled. Now, to be fair, Obama runs up against a Congress of Republican reactionaries who seem to owe their strength and power to a group of incredibly ignorant, incredibly angry people, many of whom are really not very knowledgeable about what's going on in the world, and truly believe, many of them, that this is God's will, all of this.
Now, I don't disagree with what you just said. However, I think we need to be careful when we talk about the legitimacy of President Obama.
Oh,
he's been under fire from the right since before his election on the grounds that he is somehow not legitimate and not entitled or able or qualified to hold the office that he holds. Now, I would say that rather than questioning his legitimacy, you might express your disappointment in his policy decisions and your disagreement with them.
Yeah.
But he was duly elected to his office.
Oh, yeah,
twice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not arguing about
he
that.
He is not. He's not unqualified.
He were unqualified, 70% of the presidents of the United States couldn't be president. A qualification
right.
is not a requirement.
Right. So I'm just saying we should be careful about that. That's what I'm saying.
I'll be careful about that.
Okay.
But I'm so disappointed.
Okay. The other thing I want to unpack is, how is this Dick Cheney's revenge against America?
Well, Dick Cheney has, I think, for a long, long time felt that we as a nation are not strong enough, not aggressive enough, not willing to capture the flag and plant it all over the world. And he really believes in that. He also believes in the idea of the triumph of the energy industry overall, all in the environment and in the economy, and has a mindset that pushes us constantly toward confrontation with other peoples all over, everywhere. And the situation is a one in which we pretend, which many in the United States pretend, we are so powerful that there's no real danger here. That there's really no way that we could lose the war. Well, we may not lose the war in the sense of being invaded and captured as a nation, but we lose the war in the sense that we waste the national treasure endlessly in these kinds of wars. And of course, we lose the lives of many, many people as we take the lives of many, many people. It's very, very, very disturbing to me. I want to remind people, though, they are listening to KBOO 90.7, your FM dial. We welcome opinion that disagrees with us. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor right next to me. I'm Joe Uris. We want to hear from you. 231-8187.
All right. So I want to, before we get to the phones here.
Okay. Which we will too, very shortly.
We will. I want to say one thing about Dick Cheney. Then we'll go to the phones. And then I want to get into just how often the United States has been at war, either formally or informally, throughout its history.
Yeah.
And I think in that context, we'll understand that this is really nothing new.
So, no, but it's harder to do now.
Okay. So Dick Cheney, I think 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when historians look back at this era, I think the dominant personality will not be either of Presidents Bush or Obama, but Dick Cheney. I think the story of the two Bush terms was really the story of Cheney's will to power. He is the architect of the new expanded imperial executive that now holds sway in the United States. And this is something he worked on for a long time, back when he served in Nixon's White House. His belief in both about the struggle in Vietnam and the reality of the Nixon presidency were we didn't go far enough in either case. We didn't win the war in Vietnam the way we should have. And Nixon didn't establish the imperial presidency as firmly as he should have. When Cheney left the Nixon administration, went back into private life for a while. Then he was elected to the House of Representatives, where he was involved in the House Intelligence Committee. And, of course, was the leader of the notorious Team B. Do you remember Team B?
No.
Team B was a group of fellow legislators and intelligence professionals that authored a contrarian view to the official intelligence community line, which was that the Soviet Union was becoming largely a paper tiger, that the Soviet Union did not represent the massive conventional military threat that Cheney and his friends were maintaining they did. So Team B issued a sort of parallel intelligence assessment of the Soviet Union that vastly overestimated the strength of its conventional and its nuclear forces, and thus laid the groundwork for the massive increase in military spending that took place under the Reagan administration. This was all based on the delusional assessment by Cheney and Team B of the strength of the Soviet Union. And of course, we found out eventually that none of that was true, that the Soviet Union was, in fact, largely a paper tiger and eventually went bankrupt trying to maintain the war machine that was nowhere near as big as Cheney maintained that it was. Cheney's big claim to fame is that he's really never been right about anything, ever.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wish I could have that as my.
Yeah, and people say, "Hey, you know, Joe's never been right ever." You know.
Well, that's not fair. You're right some of the time.
Listen, we want to hear from you. Our topic today is war, not just war and what is it good for, but don't we need to recognize that in fact we are not only already at war, but we'll be in war forever.
Let's go to the phones. Harvey, good morning.
Hi there. Hi, Joe and Abe. Well, I feel that since human beings are caught between creation and destruction, we're sort of thrown into life and we're yanked out of life, they're always, in a sense, vulnerable to the various forms of destruction, and one of them is war. But maybe we can move that to the virtual world. We're entering to the digital world. Perhaps we can move war to the, not try to get rid of it because it seems to be part of our nature or creation, destruction, but Maybe we can move it to a digital reality so that we don't have to suffer the physical reality of it. And in capitalism, you know, everything is a business, including the military-industrial complex. In fact, it's such a big business that it takes in more than half of the gross national product. And the thing is, I think their motto is peace is hell, because even the military-industrial complex does not want to face the prospect of bankruptcy, of downsizing. So you always, in a sense, have to have the pot boiling. And in America, of course, you know, a demonstration of a demonstration of that we're always at war. You know, we have it's not just the wars that we fight, the physical war. We have a war on crime, a war on drugs, the fight against everything is the battle of the sexes, and of course sports is very warlike, including football. So I think that is our nature, but the thing is to move it to a place where it's safe, where the majority of us are safe away from it, so that we can indulge in war, but maybe on a digital level. I know they're getting ready to arm up for space, so they're going to take it's going to be war in space. But
that's Star Wars.
Star Wars. So it seems to be that's our nature, and I'm not going to try to fight it, but maybe we can switch it around to a place where we're safer, but it can still exist as a remnant of the human element.
That's interesting, an interesting perception. I really want to thank you for the call, man.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
He'd spent some time thinking about this.
I think one of the things I really believe about our show and about KBOO in general is that we have a very thoughtful audience.
Yes, we do.
And where there are differences, the discussion can be quite reasonable and quite interesting. Raising this issue, raising the idea that we are moving inexorably toward actual physical war in the Middle East for reasons that originally had to do with resources like oil, but now have to do with other kinds of questions, and in which an ideological demand is being made of the world, that it turned to something that was kind of over in the 1500s, 1600s, the caliphate. Not over physically, but over intellectually. This is so dangerous and so pernicious and so sweeping. Huge numbers of young men and some women are joining this fight, seeing it almost like an end time struggle for justice, for the notions of a following of a certain kind of Islam.
I would say that that there are people on our side of the equation who do see it as an end time struggle.
Oh yes, oh yes. I didn't mean to dismiss or diss the whole Christian fundamentalist phenomenon that is, I don't know, about 30% of America, I think.
Yeah, including the previous president of the United States.
Oh yeah, well he. Right. Oh well he. I think it's important to hear from you all.
Yes, it is.
And also, I'm interested in thinking about what kinds of strategies beyond the creation of a powerful anti-war movement we should be using. So let's go to the phones. Michael, you're on the air.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, I haven't heard from you in a while, Michael.
No, but here I am.
Okay.
So last week, an article came out in the Atlantic magazine called What ISIS Wants. I don't know if you've seen that or read it.
Yeah, I have, but go ahead.
What it looks like to me is we are now faced with something we've been faced with twice before. Fascism rose up in the 1930s, and it was an idea. And it was an idea that was so motivating that people were willing to go out and die for it. And we had to fight it and defeat not just the people that were pushing it, but the idea. So the idea became marginal, and, you know, there aren't huge numbers of people rising up to fight for fascism anymore. Then the same thing happened with communism when we had a 50-year Cold War, and finally that idea collapsed because, you know, it couldn't keep up with us. And now we've got this one. This is this Islamic-based thing that did not rise up because of anything that happened after World War I. And you know, people are motivated. People are going there, willing to die. When you get people willing to die, that's really powerful. And it didn't even rise up because of anything much that we did. It rose up starting in Syria. And Syria didn't collapse because of anything we did. Syria collapsed because of the Arab Spring. So, you know, this thing is rising up.
So wait a minute, Michael. I want to deconstruct some of your ideas here. Apart from the notion which you put forward as an intellectual concept that there are these bad ideologies that appear as if from I don't know where, but which then have to be dealt with, do you not see... Seriously, do you not see the role of the United States in creating or enabling this particular set of ideas from becoming a major force in and a major force of play in the world situation?
Well, ISIS rose up in the midst of the collapse of Syria as a result of what started as part of the Arab Spring. I don't see that the United States particularly reached into Syria to make that happen other than by sort of encouraging what looked like the good side of the Arab Spring from afar. I mean, what did we do in Syria that led to what's happening in Syria?
Well, apart from the notion of the isolation of Syria, the creation of Syria as a nation state comes out of the decisions of the French, the British, and the Americans after World War I. You know that, right?
Well, okay, but... I mean, you know, how far back do you want to take things? And, you know, is it always to take things as far back as you need to?
Yeah, in fact, I think abandoning a hunter-gatherer lifestyle in favor of agriculture was a huge mistake. And all the evil that has transpired since then, it's all a result.
Well, you know, I don't know if you're being serious there, so I'm not quite sure how to respond.
No, I'm not.
I'm glad I have computers.
Yeah, I am too. Michael, I think what you say is, while technically true, I don't think tells the entirety of the story. Yes, what we now know as ISIL rose up amidst the chaos of the Syrian civil war, mm-hmm. For lack of a better term. But we do know that the territory that they've carved out in Iraq and the carefully produced propaganda videos of executions and burnings alive that have been created for Western audiences, I think both of those acts are carefully calculated to draw the United States into a long-term violent conflict in the Middle East.
Yeah, part of, Michael, I think you maybe know this, but for our audience in general, this is from the perception of the people involved in the struggle opposing the United States and opposing the Western powers, essentially a religious war, a crusade, though they call us, of course, the Crusaders. And at one point, George W. Bush actually used that term for us. The fact of the matter is that this is a kind of return to a fantasy of the power and success of the spread of Islam. And one of the things that I am particularly concerned about is the non-rational, the irrationality of a religiously directed attempt to rectify injustices and to turn around what had been amazingly successful advance of a specific set of ideas, particularly religious ideas, way back. So I don't, you know, I'm not sure, you know, to locate it in the outrages of the regime in Syria ignores the fact that had we not gotten involved in the first and certainly the second war in Iraq, had we not engaged in what we did in Iran, going way back to the time when we overthrew a legitimate democracy in Iran, had those things not happened, we would not be in this situation.
Well, you know, you say that, but I'm not so sure because, okay, we were supporting a nasty dictator in Iran, and then as a result, there was a revolution. And the revolution was initially led by just the same kind of people that were leading the Arab Spring in Egypt.
You're leaving out a step there.
Which one?
Iran elected a...
All right, but I'm saying he was a nasty dictator.
No.
I'm saying the Shah was a nasty dictator.
I'm saying the Shah was a nasty dictator. The Shah was installed by a CIA-backed coup in replacing a democratically elected leader.
Fine. Stipulated.
Okay.
My point is sort of orthogonal to that point. My point is that once you had this dictator, then there was a revolution.
Yes.
And the revolution was initially led by people just like the people who initially led the Arab Spring. So the intellectuals, left-wingers, people who wanted freedom, people who you would probably sympathize with.
The revolution in Iran was a right-wing reactionary religious revolution.
No, not initially. Not initially.
No, I agree with you on that point, Michael.
Not initially.
Initially, it was up for grabs, and eventually it was seized.
Let me make the point, because we'll get lost in the details, and there's a point I'm trying to make, which is that eventually what happened in Iran was that revolution got taken over by the same kind of Islamic fundamentalism that is now operating in ISIS. This kind of Islamic fundamentalism and sort of, millenarian is, I think that's the word, of like, you know, the end times are coming. That's a thing that's been bubbling up in the Middle East for a long time. That's a tendency.
Okay.
It's a tendency that has now reached a really extreme manifestation with ISIS.
Okay, so wrap it up. Wrap it up for us, Michael.
Well, okay, so I think we are at the start of something that possibly nothing will live to, that none of us will live to see the end of, something like the Cold War. The idea is what's going to have to be killed, just like we had to kill the idea of communism. Now we've got Russia, but Russia's just Russia, the country. It's not Russia, the ideology, and as a result, it's much less powerful. And what we got right now is fundamentalist Islam, the idea, and that's the one that's going to have to be killed, and it's going to take a long time and a lot of effort. But the alternative would be to lose to it, which is unacceptable.
Okay, well, thank you
for
your ideas on that. I'm, there's a lot of things I disagree with, but I don't want to spend the show discussing
agreed,
that.
Agreed, but I do agree with you that we may not live to see the end of this. But
okay.
Thank you for the call.
I think it's interesting. My perception of history, of the history of all of this, and of the United States as well, is this country, it was always fueled by a set of ideas which are essentially religious. The notion of manifest destiny, the notion that European culture is superior to other kinds of cultures.
Yeah, American exceptionalism.
Right, yeah. And the notion that we are especially chosen. I actually hear on a lot of other radio and television, these ideas of American exceptionalism, these ideas that the United States is very special and truly the place of democracy in the world.
Indeed. And wrapped up in that idea is, the cult of the warrior, for lack of a better term, that we have here.
Well, yeah.
That we so venerate in official circles, our military establishment, that to question it or to question the way it's being used is to invite accusations of unpatriotism or disloyalty.
Well, in fact, there's this film, which I have not seen, American Sniper.
I haven't seen it either.
Which is extremely popular.
That's
true. In fact, my next door neighbor...
Maybe we shouldn't comment on it if we haven't seen it.
Well, I'm not going to comment on the film except to say that what it is it's a story of a person who has emotional trauma around the fact that he is an effective killer for the United States. And the embedded assumption, this I know, the embedded assumption is the legitimacy of the sniper behavior in another country fighting for something which is somehow ideologically a legitimate struggle for democracy in another country by the United States in a war that has no real place except if you want to take it to its literal origins, it has to do with the struggle over resources. Nothing more, nothing less.
All right. Okay, so we have some callers, and we should say that this is KBOO 90.7 FM. You can reach us at 503-231-8187 if you'd like to take part in the conversation. If you'd rather comment off the air, you can do so at our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Corey left a comment on our Facebook page. He writes, as a veteran, I wish I knew then what I know now. If the U.S. had not invaded Iraq in 2003, there wouldn't be ISIS or an al-Qaeda, at least to the extent that it has reached. Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, even Obama and Biden, these are men who have no skin in the game. We continue to send men and women to die, and for what? War on Terror 2001 to present, 6,717 deaths, and for what exactly? What did these young men and women die for? I can never get a straight answer, and I feel as if they have died for nothing. Yet we perpetuate this ignorance. Fox News plays their part. MSNBC refuses to ask the right questions, so here we go again. Poor people dying for the elites. But hey, every once in a while, at least I get a thank you for your service, i.e., you're an idiot for serving, but thanks anyway.
Interesting comment from a veteran.
It is. Now, I want to look back a little bit, lest we think that a state of perpetual war is something thrust upon us by crazy religious people in the Middle East. It just ain't so. Looking back at the timeline of United States military operations, there's a number of media outlets that have compiled lists like this. Those years, those calendar years in which we were involved in no military operations are few and far between. We have been, for one reason or another, engaged in hostilities almost constantly since the time of our inception. The list, if you go through it in detail, is staggering. Things you've never heard about for reasons that make you scratch your head. But nevertheless, that's how it's been. I submit to you that we have been, from the beginning, a militaristic society, an expansionist and imperialist society, and we have not hesitated to use our military might for our own ends, whatever they might be. And however much we wrap this up in the flag, and however much we make protestations of our role as the eternal defenders of freedom, the fact is that we are an imperialist power. We continue to be an imperialist power. And here's a little test you can apply to the current ongoing conflict in the Mideast. Would we be there and would we be involved were there not a vital economic resource located in the Middle East? And I think the answer would be no.
Yeah, I think that's really important to understand. When we look at that whole region, when we look at the creation of what is the current state of Iran, for example, we quickly find that the roots of where it's at now have to do with the United States, the CIA, and the British at the behest of the petroleum industry in their great concern, not just around the advances of the Soviet Union, which was a concern, but in fact to control the oil of that region. And it goes that way when we look at what happened in Iraq, when we look at what's going on all over. And the role that that Israel plays right now as the ally or the partner of the United States in that region is about Western dominance and Western philosophy.
Now, here's the other thing I want to take a look at. The power to declare war is explicitly vested in the legislative branch in the Constitution.
Yes.
Congress shall have the power to declare war. You want to take a guess at how many times we've actually declared war?
Well, actually, I know. But oh, okay, I'm going to say, I'll take a guess, we've actually declared war 3 times.
No. Actually, we've declared war 11 times.
We actually have had Congress declare war 11
Congress
times?
Has declared war 11 times, but here's the wrinkle, in the context of 5 different wars.
Ah.
These were multiple declarations of war on different nations that happened to be involved in the same
Who
wars.
Did you have a list?
I do. The War of 1812, we declared war upon the United Kingdom.
Oh, yes.
The Mexican-American War, we declared war upon Mexico.
Well, that was important, though, because we got a third of the country.
Yes, we did. The Spanish-American War, we declared war upon Spain.
No, that gave us coaling stations. It gave us the war in the Philippines where we tortured and used waterboarding.
It gave us the Philippines.
Philippines
it gave us Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and Cuba, except we gave it back.
And Guam.
Yeah.
Okay, World War I, we declared war upon Germany and upon Austria-Hungary.
Yes.
In World War II, we issued declarations of war upon Japan, upon Germany, Italy, and then later in the war, Bulgaria, Hungary, and Romania.
Right.
Our last declaration of war was issued June 5th of 1942.
So we haven't declared war since then.
We haven't declared war since then.
Ah.
So that begs a very prominent question. Why, if this power is vested in Congress, have we used it so sparingly? And why have we been involved in hostilities absent the declaration of war? The answer is that we have gone to war when it's been convenient.
Okay. I feel better
now.
Long
and the short of it.
You've really made me feel like it's okay.
Yeah, okay.
Well, remember that the Korean War was called a police action.
Right.
And it resulted in the bizarre situation we're now in, where we have a crazy, isolated North Korea, which is rapidly becoming not just a trouble spot, but a potential destroyer in the world with nuclear capabilities, but with actual nuclear weapons. We got into Vietnam at the behest of initially at the behest of the French, who were losing a colonial war there. That war was sold to the American people as a war against communism. It went on and on and on. We lost. Now Vietnam. is essentially a quasi-democracy with a totalitarian base that is a big, big player in our low-cost production of goods.
Yeah, a lot of cheap labor in Vietnam.
And there was no real rationale that made any real sense about Vietnam.
So if you wonder ever whether the language we use to describe things is important, my answer to that is absolutely it is. Here's why. If you read James Madison's notes of the Constitutional Convention, and I recommend that you do so, he took almost verbatim notes of the proceedings, and they're fascinating. During the Constitutional Convention, the phrase was changed from "Congress shall have the power to make war." That was changed to "Congress shall have the power to declare war." And this change was made ostensibly to give the executive the power to quickly repel attacks if necessary. For example, if all of a sudden there's a bunch of Canadians who've come across the border into upstate New York, the president, according to the Constitution, would have the power to repel that invasion without consulting Congress. But as we can see, because of that small change in language, that power of the executive to marshal military power without the approval of Congress has been used again and again and again.
Well, we're about to, I mean, we've been actually waging war now for a long, long time. Finally, we're going to, under the War Powers Act, have Congress agree to continue this war.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones.
Okay.
Who's next? Jack, good morning.
Good morning. Michael wanted to start with the rise of fascism in Europe before the last Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in response to him, we should be reminded that that Hitler was financed by American and European interests. This is very well documented. His banker, his personal banker, Fritz Thyssen, dealt directly with Union Bank, who one of the officers, chief officers of which was Prescott Bush.
Right. I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Who was indicted under that Trading with the Enemies Act.
Correct. Correct. So there was some interest there in building up Hitler and I believe pitting him against Stalin. And we saw how that came out then. During the Cold War, of course, we had a legitimate advance of socialist and communist governments in Western Europe. This was very disturbing to the powers that shouldn't be running NATO, so they launched Gladio. I'm sure you're familiar with Gladio.
I'm not.
You're not familiar with Gladio? That's
no.
The same.
Hey, it is. Enlighten me, please.
There was extensive investigations in the Italian Parliament following the death of Aldo Moro, the kidnapping and assassination of Aldo Moro.
Mm-hmm.
And what was revealed, this is all pretty well documented too, is that the stay behind networks that had been formed by NATO, CIA and MI6 deeply involved, stay behind networks were put in place with the purpose of repelling a Soviet invasion, were it to, and they anticipated there would be one. These would be like behind the lines networks of guerrilla fighters, resistance fighters, and they had caches of arms all over Europe. They received training on Sardinia, by the way. And when the invasion didn't happen, and they saw that legitimate means were being exercised to to elect socialist and communist governments in Western Europe, they became very troubled with this, and they launched a wave of terrorist false flag attacks all over Europe, and then blaming it on groups like Biedermannhof and Red Brigades, and it was effective.
Well, effective. But you're not saying that the Biedermannhof gang or the Red Brigades weren't really terrorist organizations?
Oh, they had all the intent of being real bad guys, you know, wanting to do very destructive and terrible things and terrorize people. They just didn't have the capacity or the means to do it.
And you're suggesting that we...
It took professionals to really do it.
So we gave them the capabilities that led to their...
No. Professionals outside their networks actually did it.
Yeah,
and
I don't...
hung it on them.
Yeah,
no, this is well documented. You can look it up. It's easy to find. There were extensive hearings in the Italian parliament about this. Investigations were carried out, and they were particularly disturbed in Italy because of these bombings in Bologna train station, for example, Milan mm-hmm. bombing, Aldomaro's death, etc. Okay, so fast forward, what have we got since 9/11? We have what many are calling now Gladio B. We've got terror all over the world, and it serves to provoke more response.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and this isn't really anything new. We go back to the wars that were discussed earlier as well. We have Remember the Maine and the Hearst media empire that drummed up the war, the Spanish-American War. We have a well-documented, finally admitted Gulf of Tonkin incident fabricated mm-hmm. to get us into Vietnam. This isn't a new technique or tactic, I should say, and now we've got endless war, as you point out, and the resources are one thing, but failed states, I believe, many analysts conclude, is the real goal. Failed states. Failed states cannot protect their citizens from the ravages of the IMF and the World Bank. And that's the real goal.
Okay, well, a large part of what you say, I know to be correct. A large part of it, I think, is speculative. I'm always leery of a larger conspiracy theories. But I think what you're presenting is very interesting and certainly worthy of investigation by our audiences. So I want to thank you for what you've said.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for the call.
Well, and I do think, you know, I do think that... this is a weird problem for me always. There are so many keys, so many evidences of bizarre and underappreciated efforts, manipulations, direct activities by governments operating independently or by people or organizations within governments or within the power structures, that it's really hard to pin down all of this stuff. One thing I want to make clear to people, and I think that most of our audience knows this, the reason why fascism could rise in Europe, beyond being an idea system based on kind of a Roman notion of the state, the reason why it could arrives and become so powerful are a number of combination of things. There has been the demonization of the Jewish people throughout Europe historically, from the time of the diaspora. In Roman times, the opposition of the Catholic Church, of the Christian world, to Judaism, which refused to adopt the notion of Jesus as the Son of God. That's part of the issues involved. But directly, World War I was a struggle over colonial control of various parts of the world, particularly Africa and Asia. World War I was resolved with the collapse of Germany, Austro-Hungary, and the Ottoman Empire, and the solution created at Versailles was an incredibly unjust solution, which put European powers that lost that war in terrible jeopardy and led really quite directly to the revenge mindset that created Nazism and fascism in Italy, and led in direct consequence to World War II. So what we're really talking about is how colonial struggles, evolved into a different kind of struggle that became a world war, that became a horror, that became the justification and the rationalization for an ever-armed world, which we now live in.
Should we go back to the phones?
I think so.
All right, who's next? Ed, good morning.
Oh, I want to just remind, Ed, hang on a second. I want to remind people, 231-8187. Go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to the quality of the callers that call into KBOO. It's really remarkable.
Agreed, and they've been on their game today, I have to say.
Yeah. Now, as far as, you know, this continuous war, I think we do have to go back to why we went to Iraq. To me, it's fairly obvious. Any country that wants to challenge the U.S. dollar is going to have a can of democracy opened up on them. Now, Saddam Hussein wanted to sell his oil, his country's resources, for euros. Now, Gaddafi wanted to sell African resources based on a gold-based currency. This is for all of Africa. Now, Joe mentioned World War One, and even in World War One, there was a. Anyway, I don't want to go into that.
Okay.
Do you have any comment? Any comment about why we went into Iraq and the challenge to the U.S. dollar? Oh, you know what? What would be good is if we could talk about what the consequences might be if there was a serious challenge to the U.S. dollar, as in BRICS, what's happening now with Russia and Brazil and China. Anyway, go ahead, guys.
All right, thanks for the call.
I would say Saddam Hussein in the early 2000s was mulling transitioning his oil reserves from being valued in U.S. dollars to being valued in euros. That certainly may have contributed to the Cheney administration's drive to invade, but I don't think it tells the whole story. Cheney, personally, had been obsessed about controlling Iraqi oil reserves since we failed to do so in the first Gulf War. There are reports, if you'll think back to the early 2000s, about closed-door meetings in the White House between Cheney and oil company executives, in which maps of the Iraqi oil fields were unrolled and gone over. So apparently the germ of this idea was there long before September 11th, long before Saddam Hussein started seriously considering transitioning his oil reserves to be valued in euros. I'm trying to remember the name of the watchdog group. Public Citizen, I want to say, that tried to get those the records of those early energy industry meetings released and were denied by the Bush administration on the grounds of national security.
Well, and, you know, all of this is all of this supports our argument of
yes,
endless war.
It does.
And I also want to mention, and I don't want to leave this out, there's been a lot of conspiracy theory around the question of what exactly happened in 9/11. I took on the focus of the assumption that it was a prearranged destruction of these two towers, et cetera, which I don't believe. But I do believe more and more evidence indicates that there was so at least among some of the Saudi royal leadership, a real interest in extending a Islamicist state system to the world, and that the attack on the United States had a great deal to do not just with oil but with ideology, and has its roots to a great extent in fundamentalism, Wahhabi fundamentalism, that again is the official line, the official rule in Saudi Arabia. And I don't want to let that go. I don't want to dismiss it. I don't know that there's a direct causal link, but there sure as heck is a lot of ideological link.
All right.
Business. Let's do business.
Let's do some business. Coming up this morning on KBOL at 9, an alternative radio renowned writer, scholar, and lecturer, Angela Davis, speaks on transnational solidarity. At 10 on Air Cascadia, Chris Andre interviews John Kiriakou, the only CIA employee to go to prison in connection with the agency's torture program. Not because he tortured anyone, but because he revealed information on torture to a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's not a crime to do these things. It's just a crime to tell people about them.
Okay.
I'm serious. I'm serious. That has characterized the entire debate around the United States' use of torture.
Okay.
All right. Moving on. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein speaks with NSA whistleblower William Binney about the report that spy agencies from the U.S. and U.K. jointly hacked into the world's largest manufacturer of SIM cards in order to monitor mobile phones around the world. He also speaks with writer and journalist Kevin Alexander Gray about Malcolm X. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D. May Roberts speaks with Damaris Webb, who's performing her autobiographical play, The Box Marked Black, about growing up mixed race, and Matt Colbert, a writer with Newberg, whose debut novel is called The Futility of Nicknames. And at 11 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews Sonnet Stanfill, curator of Italian style at the Portland Art Museum. All this and more coming up today
on
your community-supported radio station.
Yeah, it's really, I want to mention, and I want to really push forward the idea that we are, that is KBOO, the single agency of authenticity and truth in the media around Portland. I just want to push that.
Oh, wow.
Suddenly,
I feel this weighty responsibility.
Well, don't worry about it. We're sloppy enough that it just doesn't matter. But it's really important to understand that. And I really think that the contribution that this station makes to the intellectual and moral climate in the region is very, very important. And that's the reason why I emphasize again, supporting KBOO is extremely important. But what we're talking about right now is war, and it's an unending phenomenon in our culture. And contrary to our notions of America as a very peace-loving people, we have a history of terrible, terrible acts, destruction of indigenous peoples, waging war without due reason, and so on, which we've touched upon, but it's really important to appreciate and understand.
We have a tradition of being required to genuflect to military culture.
Well, and some of our own kind of religious fundamentalist ideas, which are arrayed in a way, in the minds of many people significantly, against Islam. And that whole idea that is kind of the caliphate idea, the expansion of Islam against Rome, mm-hmm. right, against Christianity, is very, very, very resurgent and popular. A lot of young people of origin in Islamic cultures are actually drawn to the excitement of ISIS or ISIL, whatever you want to call it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Who's next? Francis, good morning.
The excitement of ISIS.
Yeah.
It just sounds ridiculous. I'm 66 years old, and I've studied history, and I've lived history, and I've been very observant about this time. But I'm not going to go through history. I've observed the trends. And as a mom, I think I'll be on my game as a mom today, who has raised children not to fight over things. And to try to resolve, I want to finish, and to resolve their differences peacefully. I'm trying to figure out why these people are fighting over anything, any resources, any oil. And then I realize it's perpetrated. The weapons that these people call are using were made in the United States of America. They're U.S. arms. Whoever's perpetrating this is doing it for money, period.
Okay, Francis.
And I wanted to say one thing else, but I got to go.
Okay.
I'm angry. This is real. This isn't an intellectual conversation. This is real. People are being killed. We talk about the heinous videos that these people have showed, burning and beheading people. If those drones would take pictures of the babies that they burned and killed before they bombed them, maybe we would have a different response to all of this. I am tired
of us
continuing to, and for President Obama, who actually is trying to make the distinction between a peaceful religion and what whoever these people are, for people to say that he doesn't love America because he's trying to be reasonable and seems like an intelligent, logical human being and doesn't want to kill more babies. He is being portrayed as some kind of an enemy to this country. We need to really get real right now. Really get real and stop talking all this intellectual nonsense and talk about what's really going on. And if I was there, Mom, I'd tell him to sit down and stop right now. Stop
okay.
playing with
Francis,
something different.
Francis, I have to let you go, not because what you're saying is bad or wrong or irrelevant, but more importantly because we can't hear you. Your source of reportage here is weak.
Hey, thank you for the call.
But
as
we
always,
do thank
Francis.
You for the call. That's too bad.
It is too bad.
Yeah.
There's so much to get into here. this notion that I got into a big argument with an old friend of mine. She's a servicewoman on social media. She was claiming that the ISIL video that in which they burned a guy alive was just morally reprehensible. And I brought up the point, well, you know, what about the innocents that have died from drone missiles? Is that any less bad? And then all of a sudden we were wrapped up in how dare I question the integrity of the United States military? And though they were fighting to protect my freedom, and it was much, much worse to burn that guy on a video than to detonate missiles in the midst of a wedding. But this is how this obscures any rational conversation about militarism in the United States.
Well, we've run out of time. I hope... Unfortunately, I think we'll be revisiting this war, an endless war, many times in the future. I hope we haven't bored people with it. I certainly hope we haven't bored people with it. You got to realize that we need an anti-war movement now more than ever. And it's time. It's time for everyone to get out in the streets, to send letters to their congresspeople, to raise holy hell to stop what, to me, seems like a war that cannot be won or lost. That it will be endless and it will simply enrich the military-industrial congressional complex.
We're back at you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you very much. And stay tuned to KBOO.
Through a crack in the wall on a visionary flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. Coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, renowned writer, scholar, and lecturer Angela